saw the title was Stone Bias in the 21st Century. I don't know that the 21st century is that much different than the 20th century or the 19th century, except that the only thing that may be different is that as we go further away from Sinai and deeper in Golis, so selfishness, which is part of American culture, and self-absorbedness does come in, which affects Shalom Bayis as well. The Reshiva of Hebron, Chaskel Sarna, was close. He was the elder bacher of our Reshiva, of Rav Ruderman, and he was close to the Chazon Ish. And Chaskel Sarna was nifted over 50 years ago, and Chazon Ish was nifted over 70 years ago. But 75 or 80 years ago, Chaskel Sarna went to the Chazon Ish, and he asked them that, why do you spend so much time talking to people about unimportant things when the Torah of the Chazon Ish is so important? You shouldn't be spending time discussing with many, many people simple things in life. So the Chazon Ish answered him that I don't spend any time on anything except Shalom Bayis, because if the Shem Hashem is nimchak to keep a husband and wife together, so for Shalom Bayis I spend time. On anything else that people ask me, I don't give them time. So Rav Chaskel Sarna said to him, Ilamdeinu Rabbeinu, what you're saying isn't true. Because people come to ask you, should I open a store to sell pizza in, or should I open the cleaners? Should I live on a second floor apartment, or should I live on a third floor apartment and save money? So people do ask you questions on very mundane things that have nothing to do with Shalom Bayis. So how can you claim that you only answer shilas about Shalom Bayis? So the Chazon Ish answered him, listen carefully, he said that what I told you is 100% true. The only way that people will come to me eventually and talk about the important things in life, like Shalom Bayis, is only after I'm willing to give them time to talk about all the Narishkeiten that they talk to me about. So if you want to know what I spend my time with, the Chazon Ish says, I spend my time only with Shalom Bayis. I answer questions about what kind of store to open, what kind of business to run, what kind of apartment to live in. All of that is only for the purpose of people being comfortable to come and talk about the importance of Shalom Bayis. That was a wise answer of Chazon Ish, which shows us that by talking to your Rabbanim about all types of issues that are unimportant relative to Shalom Bayis, once you come comfortable, you can talk about Shalom Bayis too. One more story before getting to some practical things. There was a Yid in Eretz Yisrael, a great Goyen and Tzaddik, Avraham Gonachovsky, Rav Shimon Shabin. And a close Talmud came to him and told him that his uncle is sick. And he wants to do something in the schus of his uncle, they should have a refuah shleima. So Avraham Gonachovsky told him, if you really want a schus for your uncle to have a refuah shleima, work on your shalom bayis. So the person took offense. He said, I don't have bad shalom bayis. What are you telling me that, you're accusing me of not having good shalom bayis, and you're telling me that's why I should work on the schus for my uncle? So Avraham Gonachovsky said, chas v'shalom. I'm not making any judgment about your shalom bayis whatsoever. But when you had Shever Brachas and you said, Reyim Ahuvim, right? That a husband and wife should be good friends, right? They love each other. He's saying you can't use the bracha of Shevar Brachas again. You can only use something else. Then you're gonna go do something else for a schus. Go back to the meaning of what the Shevar Brachas is, and you can have great shalom bias, but it can always be better, and there can be a greater schus. So you want a schus for your uncle. Has nothing to do with how good or bad your shalom bias is. It has everything to do with that the stronger you make it, the better it is. And another story, I'm sorry, that comes to mind, that the Rebbe, or my Rebbe, Reb Dovid Kronglass, Reb Chaskel Levenstein, was sitting at a Shevar Brachas of a Talmud who was married for 4 days. And he turns to the Talmud and he says, so tell me, how is your shalom bias? So the Talmud started to laugh. He says, I'm married for 4 days and you're asking me how my shalom bias is? So Chaskel Levenstein told him, I'm married for 54 years and I give a din v'cheshbon every day how my shalom bias is. So it doesn't make a difference how long you're married, 4 days or 50 years, can always be better. I like telling you over this story because I'm also married for 50 years, Baruch Hashem, and sometimes I give a better cheshbon if I tell over the story. So understanding that, right? Now, as it happens, you know, I'm not a big buckering the calendar like Rabbi Hever. I always thought that if it's an Ibra Yar, like this year, that we do Nitzav Vayel as separate parshas. But I see that this year, even though it was a leap year, we still were reading the Nitzav Vayel at the same time. So if you take a look in the second pasuk in Parshas Vayelech, the pasuk gives us it tells us, the Meshra Rabbeinu says, Ben Meya Ve'esum Shana Anoichi Hayayim, Loi Uchal Oid Lot Seis Lavoi, Hashem Omar Eli Loi Sabas Hayayim. So Meshra Rabbeinu says, I'm 120, I can't go anymore, and Hashem says to me that I'm not going to be over the Yardin. So the Sipurna explains the Pshat in the Pasuk like this. He says, listen to what Moshe Rabbeinu is saying. Ben Meyav Esmer Shana Nechi Ayayim Vayuchoy Vatsis Lavoy. He says, you know, don't feel bad, Moshe Rabbeinu says, that I'm about to die, because the Derech HaTeva is that a person doesn't live more than 120 years. I, Moshe Rabbeinu, davened, they should live, and then the Eibush said, stop. And the Medrash tells us something which is so hard to understand, that Moshe Rabbeinu even said, if I could be on this earth and be a bird, it would be also good that I could live. You hear? We always wonder why when people were very sick, Rahman al-Islam, and there's what America would call the quality of life, and the Rabbanim say, keep the person alive, and they want to know, like, what is it? Being in this world is a schus even as a bird. I mean, people that are Rahman al-Islam, infirm, life is meaningful. But Moshe Rabbeinu says, but he says, and even if I had all my kaychas, which he really did have, because Chazal said, but he still had kaychas, but he was trying to prepare them for the reality he's going to die. And then he says the ultimate thing, Hashem Amar Eli, he says, and even if I had my kaychas, and even if I could do everything, but you're not going to be able to go to the show until I die, Moshe Rabbeinu says. So therefore, it's in your interest that my time is up. So here's Moshe Rabbeinu on the last day of his life, reflecting what his life was, which is that he didn't live for himself. He did not live for himself. He was selfless. And if a person lives selflessly a whole life, like Moshe Rabbeinu lived, Then, at the end of his life, he can tell them, you're better off that my time is up. Most people, at the end of their lives, they're consumed with themselves. But a person who lives for others, even in the time they pass away, can think of others as well. That's the Metzius. Rashi Zanbach once told over a story that he had a big rabbi, who was the Talmud Rebbe Baruch Ber, who was the chief rabbi in Washington, but earlier he was the rabbi in Burlington, Vermont. This story goes back to the 1920s. And one of his top alabatim was on his deathbed. And the rabbi came to see him, and he says to the rabbi, do you think there'll be a big oilam by my funeral tomorrow? So the guy was consumed with his kavod to such a point that at the end of his life, what was he worried about now? Doing tshuva, saying vidui, what kind of oilam is going to be in my leviathan? If a person lives his life for kavod, he dies for kavod. If a person lives his life selflessly, he can die selflessly. This is not about dying. It's about living selflessly. The Alter of Kelm, the Rebbe of the Alter of Slabodka, was Nifter in 1888. In 1888, gefilte fish had bones in it. And he was Nifter on a Friday morning. He told his children right before he died that when it comes Shabbos, you shouldn't cry because Shabbos is Shabbos. And if you're crying, you eat the gefilte fish. The bones of the gefilte fish can get chas v'shalom stuck in your throat. So what was he thinking about at the end of his life? How his children are going to be afterwards. Thinking about them, about the potential of them crying and hurting themselves because these people live selfless lives. This is the same altar in Kelm that every Friday night when he walked into his house, he checked, he went to look in to see how clean the house was and how the food smelled, and he went to the kitchen, you know, to see where everything is ready and prepared, and he told his talmidim, the malachim can wait for the shalom aleichem. But for me, the most important thing when I come home first is to thank my wife for everything she did to make the house ready for Shabbos. And the malachim will sing shalom aleichem later. First, I'm putting in time to show appreciation. This is how these people lived. When the Rosh Yeshivas Chaim Bachar Abed Yisraeli went to the Knesset Gedolah in the 1960s, a group of Talmidim were living in Eretz Yisrael already, among them Rosh Yeshiva Shlita and a whole group of Talmidim. Their wives asked if the Rosh Yeshiva would have a couple of minutes for them just to meet with him. And wives, besides asking Rashid for a bracha, what the wives told him was that our husbands treat us exceptionally well, and over the years we found that this came from the fact that they always were impressed of how the Rashiva took care of his Rebbe. And because of that, it made such an impression on them, on the wives, that they wanted to thank the Rosh Yeshiva for being that type of role model to his Talmidim, for taking care of the Rebbetzin, that they saw the benefits in their own lives and communicated this to the Rosh Yeshiva. The Rebbetzin was my mother's oldest sister, and many, many times when I came over, myself and my brothers came over to talk to the Rosh Yeshiva, to be learning, to be in Ashkafa, whatever it was. Many times he would tell us, before you come to me, go to your Tanta and spend some time with her. He was sitting and learning, so she shouldn't feel alone. He was always focused on taking care of the others. And he was a, you know, the most absent-minded type of person around that is known. But when it came to taking care of the Rebbetzin, right, in fact, Rebbetzin told over a story once that there was a major contributor to the yeshiva that passed Rashim in the street and Rashim didn't say hello. So he says, I helped the yeshiva so much and, you know, he doesn't even recognize me. So she said, come with me. And as Rashim was walking, she passed and he didn't notice that she was there either. He says, you see, he didn't notice I was there, he noticed she was there, nothing to do with not recognizing you. It had everything to do with the fact that he was holding a learning. But nevertheless, when it came to the Rebbetzin, you know, every Erev Pesach, just to give you a mushroom of something that Rashi would do, there's one shita in Shulchan Aruch, which we don't hold like that, holds that even a Bechaira should take from the Sudasiyim on Erev Pesach. And I don't believe that Rashiva held Malacha that was the din, but every Erev Pesach, he never went to the Siyim, the place in the dining room, but he even struck the Bachar to go to the Siyim and bring a piece of cake to the Rebbetzin, that she should have cake from the Siyim in order to show the Rebbetzin, you know, that she's a Bechaira, she was the oldest child in her family, and then he wanted to be mach of her as a Bechaira by making sure that she had from the Siyim. And I think this was not a Chumrah in Hilchus kindness of Bechaira, I think it was a Chumrah in Hilchus Kavod Ishtei. And I'm certain that I'm correct about that. So this hanhaga of Kavod Ishtei that people should have, that is of enormous, enormous importance. I'm asked many times by people a question of, is it important to show to your children how a husband appreciates a wife by the husband doing something physical, giving a hug, something like that, to show his achshava for the wife. And much to the surprise of when people ask me this question, I tell them it's absolutely inappropriate and unnecessary to do that. In fact, you know, these modern couples that are makbid, you know, when they walk out in the street, as soon as they get out, first thing they have to do is hold hands. I always wonder about them when they go from the living room to the dining room, are they also holding hands because they have to show that's how they feel about each other? Or is it only for public consumption? As soon as they go out, they have to show people that. But when they're walking in the house, they can't get through the door because they're walking around the house holding hands the whole time, right? It's superficiality at its highest, and it's a very, very cheap way for a person to show to his children a shavah for a wife. But if at the end of a Shabbos or at the end of a Suda, a husband will say, turn to his kids and say, look how beautiful a Suda mommy made, and give a compliment at a time when you're not expecting it, at the end of a yontif, at the end of a Suda, at the end of a mother doing homework with a kid, whatever the case is, that the husband be mishabeach his wife in front of the kids for how special things that she did, that's 1,000 times more effective than a hug. The hug is the cheap, nourish away. It doesn't take any effort. It doesn't mean anything, right? That's not what shows anything. But the machshiv, things that wives do for the kids and talking about it, and wives should praise husbands too, that shows the children much, much more of hachshava for the spouse than the shidchiyas of physical touch, berab. That does not show anything. Same way that those people that walk around in the street does not show anything other than the, you know, the superficiality of their lives, that in public we have to be a team, right? If they're in private a team, that's impressive, but in public doesn't mean anything, right? It's meaningless. So looking for ways that are creative to give shevach to spouses when they do good things, when it's unexpected, right, is much more important than doing things that are like what Bevel calls big things. Part of what American society has brought upon us is the silliness called birthday gifts, anniversary gifts, etc. And I call it a silliness, and at the same time I say that if in your family they celebrate Mother's Day, do it. Anniversaries, do it. Birthdays, do it. And don't ignore it. And know that it's down here in terms of hashava, but do it, because that's what society expects. But if you really want to do something chashiv, right, instead of this silliness of doing something big like anniversary gifts, and you should do them and continue to do them, and don't walk out of here and say, okay, I don't have to do anniversary gifts, I don't have to do birthday gifts. Yes, you should do it. And no, it's small potatoes. What's the big potatoes? What's the real way to show that comes from doing small things all the time, not big things some of the time? Mashgiach from Baruch Rav used to say in Yiddish, from one of the great Bali Musar, grace and mention to an Alamo Klein Zachen, and Klein and mention to an Alamo Grace Zachen. Big people are always busy doing small things, and small people like doing the big things. That's part of the superficiality of America. So you do a big thing, birthday, anniversary, Valde. What are you doing day to day? Calling in the middle of the day to see how your wife is managing? Sending a small gift on a day when nothing was expected? Doing the dishes at night if your wife fell asleep before, and then you know that she'll appreciate waking up in the morning to a clean house? Taking care of small things day in, day out, day in, day out, shows much more ahava. The tedious of doing things all the time is much more effective in creating a home, and much more challenging. The gifts are simple, right? And don't walk out of here, stop giving those gifts. But no, it's small potatoes. You really want to be a good husband? Then do things every single day, small things. And they're makayos from Chazal for this, how important this is. The Gemara says in Avodah Zarah, on three different people that earned Olam Haba, three different people that earned Olam Haba for a moment of greatness, right? There was an officer who spoke up to defend the Yidden, Ketir Bar Shalom, and he was killed. Elazar ben Yudai was with Zionists, and then he did tshuva. And then another officer, the Gemara says, he also got killed. Ahaka Bachar Rebbe, Rabbeinu HaKadosh, cried because the Baskel came out for all these three people who had a moment of greatness. Yesh Kaina Ilomba B'Sho'achas. There's somebody who can get Olam Haba in 1 hour. Yesh Kaina Ilomba B'Kam B'Sho'os. And some people that need Kam B'Sho'os many, many days to get their Olam Haba. And the Marsha asked the question, why was Rebbe crying now? This is a moment of excitement. Three people were not destined to get Olam Haba. They got Olam Haba because of their great move that they did. And Rebbe's crying. He should be besimcha. So you cry now? Now is the time for simcha. These people made it to Olam Haba. What could be better? Zokta Marsha. You know why Rebbe was crying? Because listen to the Lashon of Chazal carefully. Yesh kaina oilomoi. The person got his Olam Haba, Mishah Achas, for 1 minute, for one moment of greatness. And that's a very small piece of Olam Haba. Baruch Hashem, they got Olam Haba. They wouldn't have gotten it without that moment. But the moment was their lives were empty and they had one moment of greatness. And now they got into Olam Haba in the bleachers, in the back seats. A small portion. But a person that does things day in, day out, all the time, that is where you get the Olam Haba for. So therefore Rebbe was crying, yes, for them. Yes, it was happy that they made it to Olam Haba, but it was from a small, single act. Great act at the time. Right? For the moment. Where is the success? In the day in to day out struggles of life. And that marsha is an Avodah Zarah and Daf Yud. There's another marsha at the end of the first parak in Megillah, where the Gemara says that the Torah mentions the years of Yishmael only in order, the Gemara says, to tell us the years of Yaakov Avin. In fact, the marsha, maybe the Torah mentions the years of Yishmael because Yishmael did tshuva. How do you know it's only to figure out how old Yaakov Avinu was, Sakta Marshah, because Yishmael lived an empty life. In fact, he did tshuva at the end. His years are still not chashuv years. So why did the Torah mention his years? The Torah mentioned his years because of Yaakov Avinu. For his years were empty. He did tshuva at the end, right? But it's better than not doing tshuva, but it wasn't tshuva miyava. It wasn't that all his years were wonderful. If we look at his children, we see that pretty clearly, right? Loud and clear, right? So therefore, his years were only counted because, not for a single act. So we have to get past the notion that you can do big things. There are families that mistreat kids, and then when it comes to making a bar mitzvah or a chasna, they make a gevaldik simcha. And they think, oh, now, even though we're not mechaber ourselves, each other, and there's so much tension in the house, but as long as it's a nice wedding and as long as it's a nice bar mitzvah, bas mitzvah, then everything will be fine. And those kids grow up with the nice bar mitzvah and with the nice bas mitzvah and with the nice car and with the nice wedding, unhappy people. Because they didn't see day in, day out, strong shalom bayis. I always tell people, if I could, I would do the following. I'm not going to do it, don't get scared. But here's what I'd like to do just to make how strong this point is. If I could, I would get up on this table right now. Imagine I'm on the table, yelling so loud the following statement that they're coming from Yeshiva Lane to hear what went wrong that somebody's yelling so crazy. Okay? So here's the statement that I'm going to say, standing on top of the table, yelling like a madman, that people are coming from 1,000 yards away to find out what happened. You ready? There's nothing you will ever give your children. Not clothes, not camps, not vacations, not Pesach hotels, not weddings, not bar mitzvahs, that will give your kids the same simchas achayim that they would have to see their parents as a team. Just got that one. And that's the Reina Emes. That's the truth. Right? Those are the cheap ways to do things, but not the effective ways. The effective way is day in, day out. And if you think about it, think about the following statement. You have a situation at home where your spouse, this could be your wife making a mistake, you make a mistake, does something wrong. And you're right, and she's wrong. It can happen. It could also happen, right, that you're wrong and she's right. It makes no difference who's wrong or right. A person should ask himself the following question. What is more important in life? To be right, or to be happy?
What's more important?
If being right is more important, then you make a machlekes over things. If being happy is more important, then you're seifel even when somebody makes a mistake. But I'm right. Okay? So therefore what? Now that you're right, therefore, so that's a heter not to be happy. That's a heter for your kids to see the score. That's a heter for your kids to feel insecure because you got so angry at each other that they want to know they can still stay together. And if the two closest people to them don't get along, then I see this all the time. I have girls and boys in Shidduchim who have a hard time making decisions. Sometimes it's the girl versus the boy, and there's an issue, which could be. Many times it's the girl versus the girl, and the boy versus the boy himself. And whoever they're going to go out with, they're going to have a difficulty. You know why? Because when you start digging, you find out that since their parents aren't happy, so if the two closest people to you in life you can't trust to be together, how do I know I'm going to be good with this person? So they have an insecurity. And that insecurity affects them in their life. But I was right. That's the main thing. You want to be right, you want to be happy. There are three words that we like to use to describe what Shalom Bayis is all about. And if you only walk out of here with these three words, you got something. Maybe some more too, but for sure this. Ready? This is the three words that you should remember more than anything else that I'm going to say today. Ready? Marriage is happy, hard work. Somebody says it's not hard, then they're either a liar or because they enjoy working on themselves and therefore they don't feel bad that they have to be mavater and different things. But if a person really wants to be happy, then he does the hard work of knowing that Scharim and the Kavis are different, that each one comes from different families and different values, and that yes, you are imperfect because you were born after Chet Adam Rishon, your wife is imperfect because she was born after Chet Adam Rishon, and you accept each other with your imperfections too, and you become a team whatever, whatever differences you have. And part of that happy hard work is not to nourish a question that people will say, would I marry this person today or not? Hashem isha le'ish. This is the person you married. This is the person you had children with. This is the person you're going to be with in your kever. And your job is with her chesreinus, with your chesreinus, with things that come naturally to you that don't come to her and vice versa, to say that our job is whatever differences we have, that those differences are what the Eibishter chose for us for whatever reason that we can't understand, to live with those differences, to grow with those differences, and to realize the importance of Shalom Bayis. If you have that attitude, and that to realize that this is happy, hard work, right? And you should not say, which is going to many minds, perhaps, is, I'm too old to change. She's too old to change. She is the way she is. I am the way I am. And it's 100% true that people don't change. But what we can do is, even if we can't change it, so Salanter used to say that it's easier to learn Gan's Shas than to break a Mida, but everyone can modify their behavior and work on things and make themselves better. And there are ways to do it. So Salanter writes in the Ar Yisrael, Michtav Lamed. He says, whatever Mida a person has to work on, if he says over and over and over and over the
great chazal for that midah. And he says, just like water can make a hole in a rock, chazal, by saying it, can change a person. And people will say, oh, I said the chazal 10 times, 15 times, it didn't help. He says, say it 1,000 times, and it'll help. You're in a car, and you know you have a meter called Kass, turn off the radio, nobody's there, and yell at the top of your lungs, Kol HaKoyes Ki'ilu Oyved HaBen Zara. And Yisrael talks about saying it loud too. That makes the ration. You say it 10 times over, 15 times a day, a month straight, 5 months straight, and the chazal will penetrate. But not just for Kass, it's for any meter. Always ask your Rav, which is the right chazal for me to concentrate on. I give people, when they come to me with a problem, I'll give them 4 or 5 chazal to say on a particular midah. And say it to yourself whenever you have time. And so even talks about saying it loud, because the chazal, the pasuk, has a hashpah. Chazal has hashpah. And so it says, and people will tell you, oh, what do you mean? I said it 15 times, 100 times on the app. I said, do it 1,000 times. And keep on doing it. It will make a ration. And you will be able to have control. Whatever the meter that you have to work on is, as long as you stick to it and you keep on repeating it. And then you'll be a happier person. Your kids will be happier. And it'll make a difference. I had a Talmud who never helped out Erev Shabbos before, before he always came home a half an hour from work, Erev Shabbos, and his wife was so upset with him for doing that, that she used to make fun of him, how he did Kiddush, how he cut the challah, as her way of protesting. So I told him, for the next 6 months, you come home a couple hours earlier and help. And I promise you that you'll do it for 1 week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks, 5 weeks, and your wife will still be making fun of you. And you keep on doing it. And after 6 months, she'll hop. You're impatient. You want her to see it right away. Right? You came home this week. And the week before, and the next week, and she's still impossible, right? Have patience and keep on doing it, and it'll change. But it doesn't happen quickly. It takes time. It takes patience. It takes effort. But if you do that, you will see. Will be a difference. It will be a difference. But ever it is, pick one thing to improve. If you make a list of things to improve, you'll get nowhere. If you pick one thing to improve for each of you, and you keep on doing it, it'll make a difference. And Chazal say, Ezel Gibor HaKevish Es Yitzroi. They don't say, Ezel Gibor HaKevish Es Yitzhara. Because the Yetzirah, if it's for everything that you're doing wrong, then you'll never get anywhere. Kevish Es Yitzroi says, take one thing that's really staring, right? You're organized, your wife is not. You're punctual, your wife is not. Whatever it is, whatever difference it makes. You know, Rabbi Michal Twersky says over that his father was always on time, and he was always late. So every time they say the late Rabbi Twersky, he doesn't know if they're talking about his father or himself, right? Because some people, just their nature is to come late, right? So if your nature is to come late and the shter is your wife, you work on it. Will you see success because you come on time? No, it'll take time. And one more important thing is that everybody from happy marriages, I'm not talking about unhappy marriages, from happy marriages, everybody can say that
I'm doing more to make it good than my wife. And my wife can say the same thing. I'm not talking about unhappy marriages, I'm talking about happy marriages. I think I do more than my wife. And my wife maybe thinks that she does more than me. And you know what? It doesn't make a difference. Because if you realize that the Rabbeinu Shlomo does more for you and me than we do for him, because we do for him nothing. And tzedakta matitin lo. You did mitzvahs, he's giving you schar. He doesn't need your mitzvahs. He's giving you opportunity. He lets you breathe, he lets you eat, he lets you make money, he lets you do this. Right? And you do averis. So Teder Banshlam, as the Rechaim HaKadosh writes in a place, every chesed Hashem is a chesed shlamis. If you do more for your wife than you, you'll be like Hashem. And sometimes it's really hard to know the truth anyhow. First of all, it doesn't make a difference because you have to be like Hashem. Second of all, even if you're doing more and she's doing less, you'll be like Hashem. And you know what? You don't know what things come difficult for her that she's overcoming for you, that maybe she's doing more. But marriage is not business. In business, you can be a bean counter and say, 50-50 shutfim, I'm putting in 80% of the work, he's doing 20%, why is he getting 50% of the money? That's a fair taina, right? But in marriage, it's not, because it's not a business. It's a union. It's hashros hashchina. And hashros hashchina doesn't come easy. You want hashros hashchina, you gotta work at it. Shchina is not a simple thing. Right? If you work in Shalom and you put teichus in and you're not a bean counter and say, I'm doing more than her, right? If you are, you aren't, it doesn't make a difference. Right? You do it and realize that's what's going to bring happiness to your children. And whatever your situation is, it can still change. It can still be better. And if it's good, it can be even better. And if it's bad, it can be good. Don't ever give up. You realize that there's ruchnius in this, in the amount of ashras hashchina you have in your house. And that has to do with how you treat your wife. And the yesod, and we don't have any more time now, but the yesod is that if you become happier with yourself, you'll be happier with your wife too. Because a lot of us have certain unhappiness in our own lives, and we're disappointed about ourselves for different things. And who do we take it out on when we're disappointed? The person that we're married to. So work number one on being happier with yourself, with your chesroinus. And then work on being happier with your wife, with her chesroinus. And realize that if you put in that type of effort, and you do small things all the time, and you work on yourself, that the peris in terms of hatzlacha and parnasa and hatzlacha with kids and happiness in life is ain the shire of ain the tire. This is a miyut the miyuta of what needs to be talked about in this important parsha. It's beautiful that such a oil gets together for such a thing. You should have a good kibbench to yar, hatzlacha, bracha, and parnasa, and the ikir. In ain shalom, Rashi brings in Chumash Ein Klum. If you have Shalom, then whatever your parnasa is, it's okay. You have a good life. And if you don't have Shalom, whatever your parnasa is, it's worthless. You say it, how you say it is, whatever everything is, Shalom, 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 happy hard work, good conventional.